got a 50-year-old man in cardiac arrest, and our building just lost power.
All right, give me jumper cables, rubber gloves, 3,000 grams of Solmedrol. Stat.
What are you, MacGyver?
No, I'm the Generalist.
I'm back with Jake Anderson, and today we're talking about another aspect of hospital medicine, and that is transfusions. First, we're going to look at transfusion thresholds, and then we're going to briefly touch on transfusion reactions.
Hey, Heidi. Good to be here.
Now, Jake, we've been doctors long enough to have already seen several changes to the threshold at which we should transfuse our patients. So much so that it's actually kind of hard to stay on top of what's the current recommendation.
Yeah, actually, I sort of am nervous because you're 4 hours ahead of me, time zone wise. And so there's a chance that you have more updated information and a different target for these just based on how quickly this stuff changes.
Hey, boss, we got a message from the East Coast. It says, this just in, transfusion threshold is now 6.5. P.S. Pacific Standard Time stinks. Hey, wait a minute.
Before we go any further, Jake, I think we need to clarify which units we're going to be using, because a lot of our listeners practice in places other than the good old US of A.
So we'll be talking in grams per deciliter, if that's okay. But yeah, please note the units here.
And a handy trick for anyone who's used to using grams per liter, just add a zero. Our 7 becomes your 70. Let's jump into it, Jake, by first reminding ourselves that we have moved away from the so-called liberal transfusion thresholds. And this is not a political statement. It's just what we used to do for transfusion thresholds. And that meant transfusing people who had a hemoglobin of less than 10 grams per deciliter or 100 grams per liter. Less than 10. I'd never do that now.
Yeah. Can you imagine? We see so much anemia both inside and outside the hospital that I feel like when I see a hemoglobin of 10 grams per deciliter, I'm excited.
Now we generally wait to consider transfusion for a hemoglobin that is less than 7 for a lot of patients. And this is termed restrictive red blood cell transfusion. And please tell me, Jake, who is this threshold right for?
Yeah, good question. It seems like for the majority of patients, actually, this restrictive transfusion has helped, obviously, tremendously with the global blood supply, but it's also supported by patient-oriented data.
Wow, okay. And I know multiple studies have shown similar or actually better outcomes with restrictive transfusion approaches in critically ill patients and various age groups. I'll admit, I imagine my poor little cardiac patients with their hemoglobin of 71 and, makes me nervous.
Yeah, and I don't think you're the only one that's skeptical out there. So let's talk about the data a little bit. We're mainly going to be considering adults with all this, but we'll talk about a few different groups when it comes to this. But that data that shows similar or often better outcomes with a restrictive approach, that includes groups like people with upper GI bleeds even. So there was a 2016 Cochrane review that looked at a number of different groups and is probably the best available evidence when you're looking at transfusion threshold. They found actually a decrease in the 30-day mortality when using a threshold of 7 as opposed to 9 for transfusion in people with upper GI bleed.
Why is that?
Reading through the guidance, what's postulated is there are a lot of harms that are associated with transfusions, and the clinical outcomes that we're aiming to improve when we're transfusing people maybe aren't that different when we're comparing, 7 grams per deciliter to 9 grams per deciliter.
All right, I can see that this data may be compelling for guideline writers and policy drafters, but as a community doc, it's making me feel just a wee bit uncomfortable. But because I like to follow the evidence, henceforth, for most hospitalized patients with anemia, including those with stable GI bleeds, those with sepsis, or those with multiple other acute medical conditions, I will be aiming for a hemoglobin of 7 if they are hemodynamically stable.
So if you're thinking that 80 seems much more comfortable or 8 grams per deciliter, there are a few groups that appears to be true with. The main guidance seems to come from the American Association of Blood Banks, the AABB, and they recommend using a hemoglobin level of 8 grams per deciliter as the threshold for transfusion in patients with stable cardiac disease, who of course are hemodynamically stable. So this is one of the outlying groups where 8 seems to be the preferred level.
And this recommendation is because there's evidence that the restrictive transfusion approach may actually result in an increase in cardiovascular events in patients with cardiovascular disease.
Yeah, definitely. The data is actually a little mixed when it comes to patients with anemia in the setting of like acute cardiovascular disease, like specifically acute myocardial infarction. So that's interesting. That same 2016 Cochrane review that I mentioned earlier, they actually found that a restrictive approach resulted in a non-significant increase in 30-day mortality in patients with acute MI. Again, non-significant, but maybe a trend there.
For this reason, the AABB does not make a recommendation for what to do in the setting of acute coronary syndromes. They're like, we're not going to weigh in here.
Yeah, threw up their hands. It's up to you.
Yep.
Not my problem anymore.
So another important potential exception to the hemoglobin of 7 threshold is in those undergoing orthopedic or cardiac surgery specifically.
But not other surgeries.
Yeah, you know, the question of whether other surgeries might benefit from this is still a question, partly because these studies have not been done.
Yeah, so in light of this, the AABB recommends transfusion for a hemoglobin of 8 or less in patients scheduled to have their orthopedic or cardiac surgery.
The last group we should talk about is people with chronic anemia who happen to be in the hospital, maybe for that reason or for a different reason. Right? And so somebody who's used to existing at a lower hemoglobin threshold for a long time, what do we do with that group?
Yeah, and these people are quite adept at functioning at their lower hemoglobin levels for the most part. So the threshold in this group should be a hemoglobin level that's a bit lower, particularly in those with anemia of chronic disease due to kidney disease. So what does that actually mean in terms of a bit lower, Jake?
Yeah, well, so the guidance here actually is put together by a few groups, including the American Red Cross. They say consider reserving transfusion in people with chronic anemia until they get to a hemoglobin of less than 6 grams per deciliter.
I'm shaking my head here. Wow. And my eyes are bugging out. Wow.
Yeah. This is, of course, if they're tolerating it from a symptom standpoint. And again, of course, hemodynamically stable. But the real focus should be on correcting the underlying condition that's causing the chronic anemia rather than transfusing them. And so if somebody's feeling okay, hemoglobin, even in the 6 to 7 range, they can avoid transfusion based on this guidance.
They need their erythropoietin and iron transfusions, not their red blood cells.
That's right.
Wow. Okay, Jake. So to sum this up, restrictive transfusion is the way to go. It's the new normal. It's what all the cool kids are doing these days. And this means using a marker of 7 grams per deciliter or 70 grams per liter as your transfusion threshold 7. We should, of course, consider a higher hemoglobin target in those with cardiovascular disease and in those who are undergoing orthopedic or cardiac surgery. And also, we should consider a lower target in anyone who has chronic anemia.
That's right. And so this is a good thing, right? Because blood transfusions are a precious resource. And so anytime that we can avoid this while not worsening outcomes is a good thing. But once you've decided to transfuse, that's only the first step, right? There are some complications that you should be on the lookout for. So let's quickly kind of run through a few of those so people can feel confident that once they've made the tough decision to transfuse, they know what to do should there be a complication.
Transfusion complications.
And we'll start by saying that transfusion reactions can be either immediate, and these occur within the first 24 hours, or delayed. And those, you see them after 24 hours post-transfusion.
Yeah, immediate reactions, some people will call acute transfusion reactions. There's a bunch that fall into this category, and it's the things that we worry the most about. There are things like anaphylaxis, acute hemolytic transfusion reaction, transfusion-associated circulatory overload, or TACO, and transfusion-related acute lung injury, TRALI, just to name a few.
Okay, and let's have a look at these. The acute hemolytic transfusion reaction should be suspected if a transfusion patient develops a fever, if they have pain at the transfusion site, if they had that constellation of dyspnea, flank pain, hypotension, hemoglobinuria, or even you can see DIC or renal failure with this. You really don't want to miss it.
No. And if it's suspected, testing should really focus on identifying that hemolysis. So you can do blood tests like testing for lactate dehydrogenase or haptoglobin. And you should also be testing for incompatibility so you can identify the source of this. Treatment focuses on maintaining their urinary output. And so you do this through IV fluids often or IV diuretics concomitantly. Providing analgesia is important. And then sometimes these patients even need blood pressure support. So correcting hypotension using pressors might be needed.
They can get pretty sick. Let's move along to TRALI, or a transfusion-related acute lung injury. And this should be suspected in someone that develops pulmonary edema and hypoxemia, and they can also become hypotensive as well. And in these patients, obviously, you want to rule out other causes that we can see with transfusion, like heart failure, because we've increased their intravascular volume quite a bit, or TACO as well. And also look for hemolysis and incompatibility, as we mentioned before, because that's an important one to think of.
Yeah, treatment here is supportive. They'll usually eventually recover. And in the meantime, we provide respiratory support.
And then on to TACO, which I will always remember, especially on Tuesdays. I'll always remember to think of it then. Taco Tuesday! And this is transfusion-associated circulatory overload. And it also presents as pulmonary edema. And you see it more often in our older patients and those who come into us with an impaired fluid balance already, people like with heart failure.
Yeah, it presents with dyspnea and cough and even sometimes signs of heart strain, like ST segment changes on the EKG or a chest x-ray showing an enlarged cardiac silhouette. And even on blood tests, like elevated troponin levels might be present.
The treatment for this includes diuresis and respiratory support, so they can get pretty sick. Jake, how about the delayed transfusion reactions?
Yeah, so delayed transfusion reactions, remember those are the reactions that happen greater than 24 hours after that transfusion. They include things like delayed hemolytic reaction, alloimmunization, and fortunately, very rarely, but it can include graft versus host disease.
Yeah, thankfully and fortunately, many of these reactions are avoided through our very thorough typing and matching processes that our blood labs do for us when we say cross and match one or two units or however many we think we're going to need.
That's right. Thank goodness for our blood banks.
Yes, thank goodness indeed.
Summary.
Jake, how would you sum up this conversation on transfusion therapy, the new thresholds and the common reactions?
There's probably a lot of opportunity to protect the precious resource of RBC transfusions by adapting to these evidence-based thresholds, which for a lot of people is a hemoglobin of 7 grams per deciliter, and you know, for select people, 8. So remembering that 7 to 8 is really your target as opposed to previous more liberal thresholds, you're in good shape and you're protecting patients from the potential complications of transfusions, but then also saving the blood supply for people who might really need it.
Absolutely. And it's part of our job is to be good stewards of the resources that our patients have to help them out. So, okay. Listen, Jake, it's always a treat. So good to see you. And we'll see you again for another trip down the hospital hallway to figure out how to do best practices in this aspect of our work.
Thanks so much.